Welcome to the Vortex Nation podcast, brought to you by lovers of hunting, shooting, public lands, the Second Amendment, and good food.
All right, what is up, everybody? I have Jim to my right. Yes, I repeat, Jim to my right. Jim, you're alive.
Not dead.
You're not dead. We were just talking about this. Apparently, there was quite some concern about your brief absence. You're on a little vacation there. I feel like we would have addressed if you had died. Like, I think we would have mentioned that. But
I like actually the thought that you would have gone on just like everything was normal. But thanks to those who were concerned enough to bring it up. Appreciate that.
Yeah, Jim, you were saying it was kind of like It's a Wonderful Life thing where you're, like, you kind of got to see from the outside in, and people cared.
Yeah. Couple of followers out there. Wow. One of them even said, man, we're going to miss him, even if we don't actually miss his car references. So, yeah. But more importantly.
I was going to say, more importantly than you being alive, Jim.
Yeah.
We are joined by Lucas Bodkin from T-Rex Arms, special guest today. We've been kind of hanging out at Vortex HQ. So, Lucas, welcome. It's been
Thank
a pleasure
you.
Having you.
I've learned a lot being here.
Awesome.
It's been great.
Awesome.
Good to hear. Wow.
So, fantastic. We'll put that in the check plus category.
Mm-hmm.
I think what we're going to talk about today is T-Rex Arms. So I always say, I hope you're comfortable talking about yourself, because that's what we're going to talk about.
Oh, great.
More of our about you mentality, less about us, more about you. But yeah, I mean, very cool company, very interesting company, a really cool story, brand story. You guys are creating some really, really cool content in the gun space, which is not easy to do.
Right.
So, yeah, I guess without further ado, Lucas, you know, please tell us a little bit about yourself and kind of what you have going on, and we'll go from there.
Cool. Yeah. Well, for those of you that haven't seen, we have a YouTube video on our channel about the history of the company that we did, I think it was about a year ago, but I started T-Rex Arms in 2013. I was 20 years old, in a garage with $1,000 and an iPod Touch with Instagram. So I used Instagram to start the company, not YouTube, not marketing, not tens of thousands of dollars or anything like that. And I just started making holsters one at a time, Kydex holsters for Glocks originally. We didn't make stuff for a ton of like guns out there, or like even colors. But within 6 months, it was full-time for me. I had my first employee. And then shortly after that, it just kind of blew up as far as interest on Instagram. I mean, we were one of the first Instagram accounts showing shooting and guns and stuff. It was back when you could only post 15 seconds. There were no direct messages. You couldn't do 60 seconds. Couldn't do lives or anything like that. It was just for mainly pictures. Oh, yeah, and you could only post square. You couldn't even do 4x5. So it was very limited, but that was still where people were going. Facebook at that time was, you know, it was still pretty hot, but, you know, that's kind of where other kinds of folks were at, and it was a little harder to use, and it was starting to become, there was a lot more money put into it where you have to pay to play. Unlike Instagram, you could really kind of play the algorithm. So the company started to take off. Shortly after that, we designed the sidecar holster, one-piece Kydex holster that I'm sure people listening have seen or use. And that's when the company really blew up. It was a product that other folks really weren't making. We got made fun of making it for a while, and then people copied. So that's how it usually goes. That's how it goes.
Much flattery there.
I love it. I love it. Well, and the concept was I wanted a way for people to be able to carry a full-size handgun with a weapon light all day with extra ammo. Instead of, you know, at the time, if there weren't very many people making holsters for weapon lights. Red dots were, you know, very much taboo, and very, very few people like were, you know, using them. But I wanted people to carry a more capable firearm than just a pocket pistol and 380. That was even before 9mm, you know, single sight 9mm were really a thing. So people had like 32 auto and like weird stuff. And we just recently updated the entire holster itself, which has been really fun. But the company has grown. One of the things that I think is most unique about T-Rex is the platform that we have come to be responsible for is really what I would say over the past seven and a half years, where we reach over around 2 million people for a company that only employs 75-ish. So as far as proportion of our marketing, you know, platform compared to the size of the company, you know, revenue and employees and whatnot, it's pretty disproportionate. Normally, you'll see the opposite for companies that are in, you know, have lots of dealers and retail and rely on that kind of thing. So we put a lot of content out there. Our goal is to educate, inspire, and equip So we educate people on products, how they work. We inspire people to train. That's something that's very important to us. Skill beats gear. And then we try to equip people with stuff, stuff that we curate, we sell on our website, including the Razer 1 to 6 HD. I'm just going to put that in there.
Oh, yeah.
We didn't even ask him to do it.
No, I wasn't paid to say it either. I mean, I guess I am paid if you go to our website to buy one, but I wasn't paid to say it. So we select some products. We support those with our customer service. We ship them more or less same day, and things have been crazy the past 2 years.
Yeah,
a lot
absolutely.
Of fun. Learned a lot.
I mean, that is pretty wild. You know, from 1 to 75-ish employees in pretty short amount of time.
Yeah.
Like, that's some serious growth for sure.
There's a lot of growing pains and learning, so, and it hasn't stopped, so that's been fun.
Do you still, with the reach that you have, it's pretty incredible, in speaking to social media and online, that sort of thing,
mm-hmm.
Content-wise. That's not an easy thing to attain. Not many people, a lot of people maybe go on Instagram, they go on YouTube, and they see channels that they go to a lot, or they see channels with multiple hundreds, maybe even millions of subscribers and stuff like that, and you think it's a dime a dozen, but it's kind of like restaurants. For however many restaurants you go to regularly, there's been like millions that have tried and failed.
Right.
So that's pretty impressive. Do you still, with that being said, and with all that you do you see yourself as like, when you tell people what you do, are you like, yeah, we've got a holster company? Or are you like, is it, no, we do a lot of stuff on online, social media, and we also sell holsters. What's it like now?
Are you a content company that sells holsters or other people's gear as well? Or
that's, we're figuring that out still.
ask the tough questions here on the Vortex.
No, I like it. Honestly, holsters are 20% of our revenue, so it's not even our main, you know, thing anymore. Retail's become very big, especially with like body armor, especially last year. But I've always, from the beginning, I mean, I started with holsters, but within a couple of years, my goals for the company, I guess you could say, were more ideological as far as the educate, inspire, and equip. So it wasn't about our product. It was more about not selling the idea, but explaining the idea of the Second Amendment and why people have a responsibility to their fellow citizens and what that can look like. So when people ask, what is T-Rex Arms? We do retail, plus we do manufacturing, plus we do educational, you know, platform type stuff and activism. It's kind of hard to say. We're trying to do all of it, but I really do want people to see T-Rex Arms as much more than just a company you can go spend money at.
Mm-hmm.
And we've had messages from people who say, hey, I want to support your company. You know, is there something I can buy or whatever? And I'm like, well, you support what we're trying to do by simply taking, you know, some of the ideas and educating people to train what the Second Amendment's actually for. It's not for hunting. It's for personal responsibility and protecting people and, you know, holding potentially a government accountable if need be. Like, those are the ideas that I've really wanted T-Rex Arms to be able to champion and educate people on. So it's hard to kind of put that into a, you know, we're an ideological company or we're an activist company, because the sales side supports what we, you know, that stuff that we do, because it costs money and time to run around and do stuff or speak at colleges or whatever. So the retail side, you know, can support some of that.
And so, I'm sure that supports the retail side too.
It's a symbiotic relationship. So yeah, we're not a holster company anymore. I mean, it's what we do. Our new holster is really cool, but I would like to say that we're much more than that. And I think people have seen that in the past few years, from the Tennessee ammo tax getting abolished, and then from some of the other things we've been doing. Some of the things we're very outspoken on, which also gets a lot of people to not like us very much, which is fine with me. We're not here to make everyone happy. That's never going to happen. But it's hard to explain sometimes to people what we're about. It usually takes people following our brand, you know, for a few months to see some track record and some consistency in what we do, to be like, oh, this is who T-Rex is. They're not just, you know, a sales company or a holster company.
In a lot of ways, it seems like a pretty, you know, in some ways like a comprehensive package. Like, sales is, I guess, a component of that, right? But like, you know, you're teaching people things. You're teaching them things, either a skill, or you're teaching them, you know, potentially, you know, about the Second Amendment and what that means. And then you're also, like you said, on the equip side, you're saying, well, here's a set of tools, you know, that I offer, you know, and these are some of the tools that you may need to you know, execute these other two, you know, I guess, facets
and responsibilities.
What you're trying to do. So,
like a one-stop shop.
Yeah.
Real quick question. Can you dive in just like a little bit deeper into that Tennessee ammo tax?
Yeah. So a few years ago, we have a video on YouTube about that. We've had an 82-year-old, well, yeah, back then when it got abolished, an 82-year-old ammo tax in our state. So whenever ammunition was sold at like an FFL or whatever, there was this little 10-cent stamp, kind of like a suppressor stamp. So there was this amount of money that companies were having to pay the government to sell ammo, and it was on every box of ammunition. It didn't matter if it was 20 rounds, 50 rounds, 100 rounds, 1,000 rounds. I remember I'd buy a brick of 22 back when it was, you know, like $26 for 550 rounds, and it had that stamp on it of 10 cents. So every box of ammunition had this little 10-cent tax going to the government, which is entirely unconstitutional that you're taxing, you know, ammunition for weapons, something that shouldn't be infringed. So there were a number of people, and there was a bill, and we worked with some folks in Tennessee to present a bill to actually abolish that. And it had enough support. And we had a guy that was on the Hill who was talking to people and explaining to them why it was unconstitutional and it wasn't necessary. And the money was getting used for some wildlife, some you know various things. And so some of the argument was, oh, well, the money's being used for good. And it's like, well, sure, but you know, good theft is still theft. You're still taking money from people, and you're taxing something that you know people need. It's ammunition. But ultimately, the folks in the legislation voted to remove that law. So 82-year-old law removed. And I'm thankful T-Rex Arms was able to play a part in it. There were other folks involved as well, and you know, educating some of our politicians, local politicians. Hey, here's why this thing is wrong. And so that's something we've talked about a lot, that, you know, people focus so much on the federal level because that's where it's like cool and fun, like presidential campaigns and stuff. And I'm like, well, the local politics is actually where the real stuff is happening. You can't not focus on that and just worry about the celebrity show happening at the top. Like, you really need to worry about what's happening at your county level and at your state level.
Yeah.
So being able to do some of that ourselves and kind of show people what that looks like was very cool. And there's some other bills and whatnot we've, you know, thrown around and talked to people about, and we stay in contact with people there, you know, regarding like SBRs and, you know, other stuff like that that needs to be addressed. And we may have, you know, the votes to be able to overturn some laws in Tennessee right now. I can't say we always will. But and then the fascinating thing when that happened, and I want to touch on this, there were a lot of people that said, oh, T-Rex Arms, you need to come to my state and save us. And it's like, well, no, that wasn't the point of this. The point is you can do it yourselves. You should stop relying on organizations or, you know, places you donate money to come do all the work for you. The individual citizen can actually be involved with the local politics or can go talk to the sheriff and say, yo, are you going to, you know, be red flag lawing people and actually, like, go to your local, you know, representatives and talk to them? And a lot of people just, they don't think that's their place. But if you're a taxpayer, that's absolutely your place. You can go and talk to people and apply some pressure as a constituent. So, but a lot of people, they did understand, and so that was very encouraging. But there were, you know, some people that were like, oh, well, come do all the work for us. And it's like, well, no, we're not doing that. Like, it's, to some extent, you kind of got to save yourselves. Like, you can't rely on people to do everything for you.
Yeah.
Or the government, for that matter.
No, so, that makes sense. Well, so what was it that inspired you to get into all the stuff that you get into? I mean, have you been shooting since you could walk, like, you know, like BB guns, and then you got your first 22? Is that how it all worked? Did you have, like, did your dad do it a lot with you? I mean, how did that all, what sparked all this for you?
So this is going to be really, well, you know what? A lot of people can relate to this. So I know
what you're going to say.
It's hard. I almost want you to write it down, then we see if you're right. So back in 2000, when was it? 2012. I had an AR-15. It was a DPM. I think it was a DPMS or something with a 22 conversion bolt. Back when shooting 22 made sense. Doesn't really make as much sense anymore. And an AR, and I'd plank and I'd mess around. And then my older brother had these DVDs from a particular company called Magpul.
Yeah.
And I watched those a lot. I watched Art of the Carbine. Not as much as I watched Bambi as a kid, but I watched the Magpul DVDs many times, pistol and rifle. And what that video showed me is there is much more to shooting than just shooting Coke cans on a log. Or actually, what I shot were split logs on a big log. So after watching that those videos, I was like, oh, wow, there's training with conditions. There's training with standards. There's a reason for training. I always understood the concept of, yeah, self-defense and, you know, not as Second Amendment minded as I am now. Mm. But I always kind of understood some of these principles from my parents. But that video, those videos in particular, really showed me there was a lot more to guns than just what I knew. You don't know what you don't know. So those videos are what started me off. I would also say that some of the video games that I played growing up that were a little more militaristic, a little more about, you know, shooting and guns, also helped contribute to some of that interest and study.
That was what I thought you were going to say.
Oh, okay. Modern Warfare 2 in particular. But
oh,
whatever.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
That kind of got me fired up. So, but then, you know, but I didn't know exactly what it was going to look like. I didn't know what I was going to do. I had no marketable skills. I basically ran the family farm, and then I started playing with this plastic material called Kydex and selling some stuff on eBay, and before I knew it, I had a job. But I didn't have this overarching, super inspirational plan of, yeah, you know, being on this podcast, you know, 8 years ago. I didn't know.
Yeah.
I still don't know what I'm doing next year. I have some things I want to do next year, but a lot of it kind of evolved as I went and as I developed with my own skill sets and with just the understanding of the Second Amendment and also just seeing things in the firearms community or just in dealing with people that I was like, man, this is, you know, culturally an issue that needs to be talked about, where guns are for much more than just hunting, or the Second Amendment is for much more than this. And so a lot of it's developed over time. Mm. But I would say the contributing factors, I didn't grow up shooting. I've only been seriously shooting for about 5 years. I started shooting when I was 19, but I don't really count that because I was just planking. It wasn't until I was like 21, 22 into the company that I got serious, went to competitions, trained on my own, and then a couple years later started shooting 90 to 100,000 rounds a year. Mm. I think this year I'll have shot 50 to 60,000, 2-3 days a week. So I really have only been shooting for like 5 years seriously. And so, but I would say the catalyst was the Magpul DVDs. I think a lot of people in the industry can say that.
Yeah.
For sure.
Those were the coolest, like cutting edge, you know, I don't want to say hipster, but yeah, hipster, trendy videos out. I mean, before that, the training videos were dull and were pretty boring. I've watched a few since, and yeah, I don't know what kind of people watch those videos. But the Magpul videos were cool, and they made a young guy like me go, oh, these are, I can actually watch this. It's got some music and it's got some color correction. They desaturated everything. They didn't letterbox it necessarily, but
just the skills that they're
skills.
Teaching.
You know,
I mean, and to me, it was like that's the only content that was out there. It
was the only thing. Yeah, and I remember searching for, you know, Costa and Haley like on gun builds, and I'd go on a like Air15.com, and there'd be like one photo from a class of like, oh, this is his current build. Like back then, there was no content on the internet about gun stuff. There was nothing. There wasn't really Instagram. There weren't gun pages posting cool loadouts and kit. Yeah. Nobody had lasers on rifles. And now that's everywhere, which to some extent people take for granted. But it was very different back then. When I started learning about guns, there were not a lot of resources out there, which is why when T-Rex started getting bigger, I realized that I was trying to build the company that I was looking for when I first was getting into guns.
Yeah.
That has, you know, quality content, running around and shooting stuff, talking about products, not just reviewing products off of a bench. You know, cool looking content, content that would actually inspire me to go out and train, quality products, demonstrating products. These are all things that back in, you know, 2012, I couldn't find. The only company that was sort of doing some cool stuff was, well, I think BCM came a little bit later, but it was kind of BCM with all their instructors. So that's kind of been my goal for the past few years is, you know, be that company that I was looking for when I was a brand new gun owner. You know, 20 years old, trying to find that company I can go to learn about, you know, shooting, training, responsibility, equipment, gear, what's good, what's bad, you know. And so that's kind of what we've been trying to do with T-Rex is be that company for the newer gun owners that are wanting to go beyond just buying a rifle and putting it in a safe and thinking they're prepared, but want to do more.
Well, I know the code.
It.
It's not prepared. That's
right. You've taken one step at least beyond. Are we in a better time now? Are shooters in a better time now than they were back in like 2012 or back in?
I think if anyone, I see discouraged people all the time who are upset about either the political administration or what's going on or whatever. And as much as there can be bad political stuff happening, provided there's growth happening for the community and people in general, so aside from politics, that can be a major win because politics is downstream from culture. So if we fix some of the cultural stuff now, then yeah, in 10 years, 20 years, we could actually see some really good stuff happening. But yeah, I don't think anyone can argue things are getting worse as far as standards in the shooting community goes, equipment goes. There's proliferation. There's way more gear out there. Now, not all of it's great. I mean, we know that. There's always substandard stuff whenever things are made. But no, I think things are way better now than they used to be. But I know there's a bunch of defeatist attitude people who want to gripe about. I've seen people say Instagram has ruined shooting. I disagree. I think Instagram has raised shooting standards for a lot of people. Now, for some people, they chase flashy stuff. I used to be one of those guys who would post, my best runs and all that. And so I've said that many times. But I actually think as a whole, Instagram or social media in general has done more to help the shooting community than some of these organizations that claim to, but we just don't see a lot of fruit from them. So I think things are great. I think things are getting better. Things can always be better.
Yeah.
But I actually think we've seen some really good stuff the past few years as far as understanding, standards being changed, standards being raised. So I'm very optimistic. No defeatist attitude here.
Right on.
Not at all. Silver lining to everything.
Everything.
Mm,
I like the positivity. But I agree. I mean, you think about just the amount. I mean, and everybody knows this, but I mean, the internet, obviously. Jim, it's www. Anyway. But,
what's that? No. Oh, you still write the W's.
It's the World Wide Web.
You can stop typing .exe at the end of everything.
Really?
Yeah.
You don't even have to do the backslash, huh?
No.
Oh, all right. Good to know. But no, I mean, just the wealth of knowledge and resources and the content that you're producing on YouTube or podcasts that you're doing or other podcasts. I mean, there's so much information. And, you talk about, Instagram where other people, I mean, think about you're talking about a time where like, oh my gosh, I saw a picture of this guy's AR-15. Like, and that's where that was like valuable information when you think, when you extrapolate that to what you can find, at the snap of a finger nowadays, you can get ideas or I like what that person's doing or I don't like that. That validates what I have been doing.
Right.
A lot of information out there.
Now, one of the things we were talking about yesterday, Mark, and this is where I occasionally have these thoughts that are like hard to articulate. So I just struggle through it for a bit. You'll have to bear with me. But we were talking about this a little bit yesterday. And all right. So you have like training, like you're talking about, right? It's important. It's just part of the Second Amendment. It is our right to bear arms. And someone like yourself feels very strongly about that. I know we feel very strongly about that here. But what I was thinking was, all right, so when I go on Instagram, stuff like that, I'll see people who are, they're training all the time. They're shooting all the time. You're shooting 90,000, 100,000 rounds a year, something like that. And I'm thinking like, okay, you're doing that as a responsible citizen in a lot of ways. But I also think there's definitely something there for you where you're like, this also ticks a box for me. Like, this is kind of like my thing. Maybe I'm speaking for you a little bit, but if you could do something in your free time, it's definitely way up there, right?
Yeah.
And everybody's kind of got their different thing. And for other people, it might be another thing. Like, people know all this already. The people who thought I was dead said this is the one thing they wouldn't miss. It was my car references, right? So I'm like a car guy.
I'd miss them, Jim.
So well, I appreciate that, Mark. I think to myself, like, all right, that's really far up there if I ever had free time. I enjoy firearms. I like guns. I like shooting and training. I know is something that I should do, but I'm like, sometimes I have a hard time doing
priorities.
A lot of it,
yeah.
Right? So I'm curious, in your opinion, for the average American, like, if you had to put something out there for the average American to almost meet a goal for training as like a necessity, and anything beyond that is like cool if you're really into it and it's your hobby, like go for it, shoot for the moon. But like, is there a benchmark that people should at least try to hit? Does that make sense?
Yes. No. What you're getting at is very important, because a lot of people they see what I'm doing and they write it off as, oh well, he's a nut and it ticks a box for him and he makes money doing it, because I do make money shooting. Like, I Like I do. Like I'm not gonna lie to you and say I do it all for, you know, just for fun. Yeah. I mean, it does make money. But and that is something to kind of talk about, because there are people out there who have this expectation that they have to train, you know, have to shoot as many rounds as I do to be good. The answer is no. In fact, I should be way better than I am for the amount of shooting that I do. The reason I'm not able to, you know, focus on certain things is in the process of switching out my gear and my guns and my whatever and filming. It's not like dedicated training time on a single type of gun, like a, you know, for like competitions, that kind of
right,
thing. Yeah. I'm swapping between, you know, like Berettas and, you know, all this stuff. So a little different skill sets going on. But bare minimum, that's something that I've kind of thought about a lot. You know, what is something that the average citizen can attain to who only shoots once a month, twice a month, you know, dry fires. I don't dry fire religiously like some people. Folks that aren't as interested in guns, I just know they won't. But there's some really basic ones. You know, I think the average gun owner who is owning a gun for the sake of protecting, so not just like hunting or shooting at the on a bench or whatever, they should be comfortable and competent at moving with a firearm, which is something that unfortunately a lot of classes don't give people the opportunity to do. Moving with a weapon safely around lots of people, just full sprint. You know, you'd be surprised. I'll have students in classes because I do contract stuff. And I'll say, you know, from this point A to point B, you're going to sprint 25 meters, you're going to engage this target. And I can tell when they're running with that chambered handgun or rifle that they're not comfortable. They're not. It's like running with scissors. They're not comfortable running with the gun. Yeah. And I'm like, you need to be able to just take off and sprint with your firearm like it's just an everyday object, like a phone. Like, we run around with stuff in our hands anyway. We should be able to run around with a handgun without shooting ourselves, shooting other people, and having some confidence about it. So I've had students in the past, or like one-on-one training, where I've literally just been like, all right, here, gun, dry, run from this cone to this cone, go. All right, go faster. And I'll have them do it 10 times, and by the end of it, they're moving with the gun perfectly fine. Muzzle awareness, is, you know, that can be a little different, you know, working in and around people and stuff. But there's just some really basic stuff like that. Standard manual of arms, loading, unloading. A lot of people haven't practiced that, don't fully understand it. And then marksmanship standards and speed and marksmanship, that's where, you know, various opinions will come in where folks will be like, oh, you should be able to shoot, you know, 3 rounds at 3 yards in 3 seconds, or 20-yard pistol shot A zones, or, you know, whatever it is. And I don't have an exact, you know, expectation for people that they could meet with, you know, a minimal amount of training. But I do think it's something instructors should explore, some sort of, I don't want to say standard, but let's just say some sort of standard that's, hey, with this amount of shooting, you should be able to, you know, hit this sort of a target with a handgun at this range. You should be able to draw from a holster in under a second and a half or 1 second and be able to deliver accurate fire. You should be able to move safely with a weapon. You should be able to have your finger off the trigger when you're not shooting the gun. That's a big one. If you're not taking your finger out of the trigger guard when you're not shooting, it's a problem. Like, you should fix that. So that's a pretty basic one that you should have. Yeah. So, but I don't have the,
we'll
I don't
start
have,
there.
Yeah. Start there. Keep your finger off the trigger until you're ready to fire. But yeah, but that's definitely a discussion people need to think about, and they should not have the expectation of, oh, well, I have to be as good as, you know, like Joe Farewell, or I have to be just as good as Lucas. Like, no, your business is not, if your business is not shooting, you're probably not going to be shooting a lot. Like, you are going to be going to the range when you can, when you're interested, when your priorities line up, and you shouldn't expect to be just as good as folks who literally dedicate their lives to shooting. And I know I'll never be as good as someone like Joe, who literally dedicates more of his life to, you know, performance shooting than I do. I'm doing a bunch of other stuff in the meantime.
Yeah.
Or some of these other 3-gun, 2-gun, you know, USPSA guys. I just know I won't be as good as them, and that's fine. Unless I decide tomorrow I want to be, and then I'm just going to focus on that.
Right.
So that's expectations.
Where that's where I think we have some difficulty nowadays, because, you know, I brought up, like, do you think we're better off now than we were back then? You said yes, and I would generally agree. But I think some of the people who are naysayers to that, where they're saying, you know, well, no, we're not better off, because it's like, you know, all these gun guys all over Instagram, and they're making gun shooting seem this way or that way or whatever. I think a lot of times what it is that people are always keen to blame others for their own issues, and a lot of times I think people get jealous, for lack of a better term. It probably is the term.
Yeah.
But they look at a guy like yourself, they're like, well, that guy gets to shoot 90,000, 100,000 rounds a year. I'm never going to be able to do that. And it's like, of course you won't be able to do that, because you're an accountant. You know, and you do that for 8 to 9 hours a day. And it's like, don't blame somebody else who is doing that for your own problems, which is that you wish you could shoot more. It's like, a lot of us wish we could do a lot of things more.
Yeah.
You know, I'm sure Mark wishes he can hunt more. You even work for a company that is a hunting and shooting company, and you still probably wish you could hunt more, you know?
Absolutely.
So it's like, you can't blame the fact that you see it all over Instagram for, I don't know, whatever unhappiness it is that you feel. But, I don't know. Just, there's my thoughts.
There's a lot of
today's day and age.
There's a lot of justifying laziness is generally what I see, but you know, that happens as well.
Yep.
But you bring up a fun point. A lot of the really good competition shooters out there, they don't even shoot for like a living. They work a normal 9-to-5 style job. They dry fire in the evening like a nerd, like an absolute maniac, and then they go to a match on Saturday, a club match to practice, shoot. Oh, geez, 120 rounds. That's all they shoot in the space of 30 seconds. Mm-hmm. They go back to dry firing like a nerd every night, and then they go to an area match or a big match, and they place really high. And it's just they have more motivation than someone else who comes home and watches TV or someone else who comes home and wants to work on their model ship. I don't know. Whatever. If you want to shoot a lot, there are things you can do if you're going to set the priorities, if you're willing to, you know, budget, dry fire, get a shot timer. But yeah, there's a lot of people that make excuses and regarding other shooters or other people's, you know, situation in life. But I don't know. I didn't start shooting hundreds of thousands of rounds. I shot. Right. I had to reload ammo and I barely shot and I couldn't shoot very often. I was busy making holsters with no heating and air conditioning. And things are a little different now. But when I first started getting into guns, I owned a rifle and a Glock, and I had to reload ammo on a Dillon Progressive, and that's how I was able to shoot once a week-ish, mainly for matches, back in 2014. That was all I had back
then. If you want to shoot good, like you see people do on social media, YouTube, whatever it is, but you're not willing to do a lot of the stuff that you just mentioned, then just don't expect to shoot good.
Yeah, that's fine. Then just don't expect
it. It's fine. Yeah. So
I'll tell you right now, you're not getting me away from my model ship. So
yeah, that's just a big deal.
It's not happening. That's
I want that.
It's a deal breaker.
But no, I'm glad. I was curious to get your take on that. It's actually in line with what I kind of figured you would probably say. I wasn't expecting you to be like, everybody should be like, you know, whatever. But it's a good question, I feel like, to pitch out there for people. I see it like exercise in a lot of ways. I don't expect everybody to be in the CrossFit Games or to be having a 40-inch vert and dunking on everybody. But you should generally probably do enough movement and exercise that you can comfortably walk up and down the stairs in your house without huffing and puffing when you get to the top. You know, so it's like, it's similar to what you were discussing there.
It's a baseline.
You should be comfortable in doing daily tasks, the exercise thing, and as an American with the right to bear arms and with all of the liberties that we have here, you should at least be comfortable around firearms, you know, and not looking at it like, you know, oh, if I touch it, it's going to somehow turn around and bite me, you know, or whatever.
Yeah,
like
right.
It's a bomb.
You know, and I think, you know, there's so many new, you know, people who are hunting. You know, as of late, we have so many new first-time gun owners, which is, absolutely amazing. Like, welcome. Come on in, everybody. This is amazing, right? But, you know, you definitely want to encourage people to, you know, do enough practice or training or, you know, even getting great information off YouTube so that they, you know, they get beyond that point of, you know, I got a gun. You know, if you want to.
Like, oh, we know. Now, learn how to use it. This is it.
But again, the tools are literally at your fingertips. We did kind of circle back, and I'm glad we did, and maybe we'll jump back to where we were here. But you were talking about, you know, oh, and then, you know, I found this material, Kydex, and I didn't have air conditioning. I made some, like, you're like, it went from, I was working on the farm, and then I found some Kydex. And so, like, maybe dive a little bit deeper into, like, where you found the Kydex. Man, I really want to make some products.
Mm-hmm. Well, so, being from a farm, I can see it happen where you're just like going through some old rummage pile. Oh, here's some stuff.
There's some manure. I'm like, oh, Kydex.
It's like, all my farmer friends that usually just start, I found this cast iron around there, so I cut it up and I welded something together, and now I have this amazing tool that nobody else has.
So the way it happened is, so I watched the Magpul videos, and this is again, I don't know if I've told this story before, so you've heard it here first, folks.
Ooh.
And watching the videos, I kind of went out and I practiced. I was doing reloads from a back pocket because that's really slick, you know, if you don't have any gear because, you know, your parents haven't bought you any and you're poor, which is fine. I'm glad mom and dad didn't buy me any. I was like, you know what? I bet if I position a rifle magazine, not at my belt because it's kind of awkward to, you know, get all the way up here and grab it. If I drop it down on like a little thigh rig thing. So I was like, well, I need to go and design and make this thing so that I can actually use it. So my older brother had bought some Kydex for some knife sheath or something. And I was like, mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm gonna take all that and I'm going to go make something with it. So I took it and I went and made one and it worked decently. I went and ordered some like little materials and stuff for it. And I hadn't even made a holster yet. I was working on a mag carrier. And then I think that's when my parents said, hey, you should, you know, that's kind of cool. You should make some stuff for eBay. So I made some Glock pistol mag carriers. I ordered some more Kydex because I didn't have, you know, yeah. He didn't order a lot to make a sheath.
You ran out of your brother's.
So I ran out of his. So I ordered a little bit more, made some Glock mag carriers. I think I made a couple P mag carriers, put them on eBay. $25, you know, whatever. I then sit there rubbing my palms waiting for them to sell. I had six listings up, buy it now. No bidding, only buy it now. eBay took 10%, whatever it was. So I just, you know, stood there waiting and they started to sell over, you know, a couple weeks. And then my fire captain found out somehow, because at a fire meeting or something, I don't know. He asked if he could get a Glock 17 holster. And I hadn't made a pistol holster yet because I originally thought, well, there's already good holsters out there. Mm. I got this really awesome Blackhawk Serpa. So, like, which, you know, whatever. Everyone starts with one. So I thought, nobody needs a Kydex holster when you've got a Blackhawk, when you've got, you know, Safari Land out there, which is what my older brothers used. But he asked for a holster, and I was like, you're my chief. I'll make you one. So I made him one. It was trash. But I gave it to him. He paid me like $50. And then 2 weeks later, he ended up drawing on a home invasion situation. He came home to a burglar in his house. So he drew down on the guy from the holster.
Unbelievable.
So that, I know. Wow. It was in the paper and everything. And he messaged me and said, hey, thanks. The holster worked great. And so I got some little tinglies and some dopamine. And that really, you know, inspired me to go, well, I should just start a company if someone can take a holster. I made and actually use it. And so then I started working on, you know, a WordPress website, e-commerce. Yeah. It was like $400. I paid like $500 total for the website and I had like $500 in material. So for $1,000, T-Rex Arms was started. And yeah, then it just kind of went from there. But those early days were weird. They were great, but they were weird.
Hey, that's
how it always is.
That's how it goes. That's the best times. We didn't ask yet either, and you've probably described it at some point. But the T-Rex Arms name.
Yeah, it's great, isn't it?
You're like
it is.
When I expected when you came in and shook my hand, I had to like reach.
Yeah, they look like regulars. Honestly,
regular arms.
So how'd that come about?
So I was at the breakfast table, and I didn't know what name I was going to name my company, and I was spitting out names to my younger brother. And I said T-Rex Arms because it's funny. You know, T-Rex Arms, little
yeah.
arms.
Oh, yeah.
And he was like, oh, my gosh, that's a great name. And I was like, nah, that's dumb. I don't like that. I said it wasn't professional enough. It wasn't serious enough because it was too funny. But literally everyone in my family was like, that's a great name. You should use it. And I was like, all right, fine. All right. I guess it grew on me. But the name's great because when you hear it from a branding perspective, when you hear it, you visualize a T-Rex. Everyone knows what a T-Rex looks like thanks to Jurassic Park. It's also a play on words. It can be a joke, mm-hmm. but it's also broad enough. It can be anything. We can sell whatever we want. And that that was something that I already knew. I didn't want to name it Lucas Holsters or right. Lucas Concealment because I already knew like, yeah, I don't want to pigeonhole myself into only selling holsters. I want to be able to sell their stuff in the future if I need to. So I wanted a name that was broad enough. I could do whatever. A name you could kind of visualize, you know, there's the play on words plus small arms, you know, guns. And so there's a lot of stuff to it. So it was very fortunate to have that name and not something, you know, else.
I dig it. It's one of those things where just like we're talking about, oh, yeah, like Lucas from T-Rex Arms is coming. Yeah, people are just saying it. And then
everyone chuckles.
Then like 5 minutes into the conversation, somebody says it and you're like, we're saying T-Rex Arms.
It's sharp.
I got you all to say it. I got you all to say a funny thing.
And then it's like, oh, how did he come up with that? But yeah, I like it.
People expect some like really, I don't know, significant story. Or, no, there's none.
I mean, you ask my dad how he came up with the name Vortex, and he just says because it's a cool word.
Hey, that's great.
Yeah. Yep,
that's it.
It works.
Very broad too.
Yeah,
it is. So I predicted motorcycles in 4 years from Vortex, but whatever.
You thought we'd be doing
motorcycles? Yeah, I'm predicting y'all could sell motorcycles in 4 years. Just saying.
Oh, I'm all for it.
Don't limit yourself. I mean,
I'm all for it.
The razor line. I mean, ooh, crown.
It'd be pretty badass.
Except I'd spray paint it immediately.
Jim, you're a big fan of painting everything. You paint a lot of guns.
I like to paint stuff.
Oh, I like to hear that.
You paint your guns?
I paint. Okay, I'll tell you this. When I got my 1-10, I painted it within 15 minutes.
Good.
Yeah. So, yes, I do. I paint everything.
Nice.
From night vision to, new scopes that I get.
Right on.
And suppressors.
I'm not good at painting the stuff that I paint.
I
actually think that a slight lack of skill in painting equipment, at least like the kind of equipment that we deal with, ARs and all that kind of equipment, actually makes it better.
I agree.
100%.
It should not. If the gun is too clean, it looks like an airsoft gun. It's got to be a little dinged up, a little beat up, not perfect, to look real.
I was going to say, a chip, you found a brother, Jim, a chippy Lucas, rattle can job.
Yeah, but did Lucas also just segue us by himself, like without even our help?
I don't
know. He just said airsoft gun.
Uh-oh.
We got to ask you about
that. Oh, yeah, okay. We can ask about that.
All should we?
Well, you might as well.
We're just taking this in stride.
That's fine. Good.
You've had some videos come out on shooting airsoft.
I sure have.
Right?
Yeah.
And you're mentioning, new shooters and all that, like you were some odd years ago.
Yeah.
And trying to appeal to them, get people to come out of their shells a little bit more, do stuff.
Yeah.
Ammo is a big thing these days.
Yeah.
I'm able to find ammo.
It's coming
like,
back.
It's coming back. Sometimes it's like, how much are you really willing to spend? You're like, well, I can't find .223 anywhere. It's like, well, it's right here. It's like, well, that's too expensive, but you could find it.
Exactly.
What's your thoughts on it? Some of the videos you put out there, that one gentleman came over. I believe that he was actually from another country, and they were only able to shoot airsoft there.
Yeah, Liku, yeah.
It was pretty impressive what he could do. Tell us more.
Yeah, so I have had an opinion for a while that airsoft can translate to real firearms handling. I went to some events like 6 years ago and kind of noticed some stuff. I saw some blatant, horrible safety stuff too, but I saw some very good use of firearms and people getting, again, comfortable moving with a firearm. Granted, an airsoft gun, but comfortable moving with one, not aiming it at people with safety on, finger off trigger, all that good stuff. So it kind of got me thinking, and I kept doing T-Rex. And then this guy from Japan started an Instagram and started posting videos, and his name on Instagram is Liku_tactical. Now, the thing that caught my eye, and I have a lot of other people, is he looked just like me, down to the same shirt and pants and gear and fake T-Rex hat. So I was like, okay, I've got, a fan in Japan, but they can't own guns over there. So it's all airsoft. So a few years ago, a couple of my friends had the idea to fly him out here to, let him shoot real guns and actually see. And basically what resulted is a video, which I think now has like almost 10 million views.
Yeah.
Can airsoft translate to real firearms handling? He came over, and within 2 hours of being on a handgun with real recoil, he was shooting bill drills a little over 2 seconds. He was drawing under a second on a target. He was reloading faster than some of the LE mill guys at the range that day. His firearms handling was way better than a lot of professionals I had worked with previously. Yeah. Now, his marksmanship and his recoil control, 4 days on the range, 5 days on the range, he'd have that like much more up to par with people. But weapons handling, malfunction clearing, reloading, manipulating the weapon, moving comfortably with the weapon, he had it. It was all there. And that was just from airsoft and dry fire in Japan. So, I published that video, and we've since gone to, we went to another airsoft event recently this year, but I do think the airsoft community, granted there are people in that community that are, childish, just like the gun industry, but the people in the airsoft community are literally one step away from owning real firearms, if they don't already. And I see a lot of people in the gun industry talk about the airsoft community and disparage them as, it's all fake guns.
Yeah.
Well, the reality is, in World War II, if we had had airsoft guns, the military would have absolutely used those for training. We essentially use airsoft guns for training nowadays, UTM and simunition.
Mm-hmm.
A projectile comes out of the gun that induces some form of pain where we can run scenarios and see what happens. Airsoft's the exact same thing. Now, it's all about how you use it, obviously, But the reality is there's nothing wrong with airsoft compared to Sims and UTM, except that it doesn't mark you when you get hit. But there's nothing wrong there from a training perspective. And then there's just the community perspective of, hey, these are people that need support from gun folks, you know, real steel, real gun people, to come in there and help them. And if they want to get into real guns, you know, what does that look like? You know, what should they buy? Where should they go and train with them? Because they know where to go for airsoft events. They don't necessarily, you know, always know what kind of ranges to go to or whatever.
Yeah.
So I really think the airsoft, you know, community and the gun industry should be a lot more unified or supportive of each other.
I don't get why they're not. It just doesn't make
people
sense.
People are stupid. That's why.
There you have it.
Jim, it's people cool
have
to hate.
Egos and people are, you know, but here's the funny thing. And here's the thing that's really going to tick some people off listening to this. There are airsofters out there who are training harder and more, I would say, realistically for a Second Amendment type of thing than gun owners who just shoot on a flat range. And that was part of what my video was earlier this year talking about. You know, if you go to an airsoft event, you're not just shooting, you know, you're having to run around with all your gear. I think we moved, it was something like 11 miles or something like that in a single day in full kit, mm-hmm. up and down stairs, around, working with people, communication, target identification. Those skills and things are much more realistic to let's say a national disaster or some sort of bad thing.
Red Dawn.
Then me just shooting on a range, drawing from a holster with a shot timer, which I'm a flat range ninja. Like, I'll be the first to say it. But that's still only like 2% of the puzzle.
That's good. Yeah.
So airsoft, from a training perspective, if people want to get out there and do more than just shoot, that's really your best bet, except for joining the military, where you're also not even guaranteed to, you know, get some action.
Yeah.
But you're also not guaranteed to get action in airsoft either. But, you know, so I do think the two communities need to be more supportive of each other. I think there's airsoft companies that could be more supportive of the gun industry with, you know, guns that are closer to being, you know, replicas and, you know, some of the manual of arms. I think the gun industry could be more supportive in being involved in some of these events, hosting some of these events, having booths at events. We're going to another event here in 2 weeks. I'm taking a bunch of my guys. We're all going to run on the same team. We're going to work together, guys from my company. And then we're going to be there to talk to folks and, you know, help them give away body armor and stuff like that. Real armor, not airsoft armor.
What do they say when you guys are there? Are they just kind of like, I mean, do you get weird
there's
looks?
No,
like, what are these
a
guys?
Lot
are
of people come
like,
to
try
talk.
And make fun of us or something? I mean,
oh, there's some
I'm just
people.
Asking, I'm just wondering because it's like, I haven't done a whole lot of airsoft Mm-mm. stuff before. I don't have any issues with people who do it. But like, I just see so much on Instagram. It's like, oh, it looks like airsoft, blah, whatever.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, it makes you wonder if somebody who actually does airsoft at this point is sort of like, geez, they're always ripping it. Like, are these
they definitely notice. No, it's when we've gone, there's a lot of support.
That's cool.
Of people come over and, you know, they watch your videos already. They watch what we're doing. There's obviously a few of them out there who are like, it's those guys from T-Rex Arms. Yeah. But, you know, we always have that. And, you know, as long as they spell our name right, I'm happy. So they can talk all they want. I don't mind. They just have to spell our name right.
I mean, the platform itself, to me, having not really done it, I have been shot with an airsoft. Back in my Cabela's days, Jim, when I was up in the internet department, we got a bunch of airsoft guns. I think they were, like, thinking about carrying them as, like, an internet-only item. And then
carrying them in the... Okay.
Yeah, like as a SKU. Yeah. And... So then my buddy Mike, called, hey, can you come over here? I'm like, yeah, I come over. And then bam, 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 I got shot right in the back, like point blank. I did drew blood, Jim. It stung.
It can hurt, yeah.
Anyway, so that's my big experience with airsoft. But looking at it, watching your videos, and just kind of like the more I've, researched it a little bit. I mean, the platform itself does seem to lend itself to kind of like you can do it anywhere.
Yeah.
Like you could do it inside.
Yep.
You could do it, you know, outside. You probably do it in your
basement.
Yard.
You do can't, it. You do can't it here do at it. Vortex. You know,
we could. Ooh, there we go. Yeah. Ding.
Yeah.
There's an idea. Light bulb.
It will crack computer screens, though. So yeah.
It will. You
it
say.
Will.
Yeah,
you need
okay.
to cover them up if you want to do it here at work. You'll want to redact glass
how
screens.
How do you know that?
Never mind. No comment. There's some airsoft at our work here and there.
Anyway, my point, which is probably obvious, you can't do that with a regular firearm.
Yeah.
Right.
You know, so your opportunities to maybe practice some of these skills, or like you said, the calm stuff, or working as a team, or movements, just, you know, difficult to find the, what's the word I'm looking for? The place to do that sort of thing.
Like Lucas was saying, though, I mean, it is what you make of it. Like, if you just want to go around and do like you used to do back in the Call of Duty Modern Warfare games, you know, where you just run around aimlessly. Yeah. I mean, all right, cool. If that's what, like, you want to spend your time doing, do it. But if you actually want to, like, you can make it something that's a little bit more serious and realistic, too. And like you said, people are already doing it with the UTMs and NLTA rounds and stuff like that. And then when they do it with that, for whatever reason, it's like, oh, that's badass. You know, so it's like, all
right. Yeah, I think we talk about airsoft, again, and this is from like an outsider's perspective, like, oh, you know, eventually you can graduate to like a real firearm, where like in my mind, I'm like, man, I wonder if a lot of people should would actually benefit greatly from going the other way.
I agree. And what's been really cool in the past few years, I kind of touched on it, the airsoft community supporting the firearms community. Glock did open up licensing to have their pistols made with all their specs for airsoft. I think there's like two companies that do or something like that. So you can get, you know, Glocks that will fit normal holsters that you can dry fire and train with and whatnot, which is awesome. That you don't want to necessarily drop the magazines on the tile floor. They will break. But so there is some support there where you can actually get like the real kind of gun that you own in airsoft form and draw it and shoot a projectile in your house or at work. Well, unless your work isn't gun friendly, I guess. I take for granted that at my job, we basically require everyone carry rifles. Not quite, but close.
like so, you're the like weird. You're like the weird kid if you don't. Okay,
it's they're, like you didn't bring your closet. You didn't bring your MP5 today. Aw, yeah, that's kind of how it goes.
Like they're in the supply closet. Like, oh, let's see, I need some Post-its. I lost my pen, and then the extra AR-15s. I'll grab one of those.
Yeah, too. Mark 18 suppressed. You know, yeah, just boom.
Makes sense to me.
Yeah, it does.
Agreed.
Every business.
Field, yeah, we're all like that.
It was only the other day that we were shooting BB guns in here.
I don't think
in the studio.
I don't think we told people about that, Jim, but now we did.
Oh, now we did.
But yes, I mean, you're at a place like, you know, a gun friendly company like yours are here, and you know, I guess it depends on the context of like where you're at. But I do feel like we're super fortunate. Like, you know, somebody comes in here with a cool gun and people walk towards it. You know, probably.
Oh yeah.
Probably in a bank, you're not going to do that. But
yeah. I might go over and be like, whoa, what'd you bring in?
Right.
Well, I know. That's what I always like. If somebody ever actually came in and tried to hold up.
Bank?
Yeah. Hey, cool, man. You just take it from them.
Oh, wow. Oh, yeah. Let me check that out.
Really?
What optic are you running?
That'll really throw them off.
Why? I know why, but I don't know why. It's like it should be all places of work. Maybe not all. I don't know. All should be gun friendly.
Everyone should have a basic, you don't have to like guns, but everyone should have a basic understanding of if you don't do these things to a gun, a bad thing will not happen. You have to do these things to a gun that a bad thing will happen. And if a gun is just there sitting there, it's fine. Like it's not nothing's going to be a problem. But no, people aren't educated on guns. People fear what they don't understand. For example, I am not particularly interested in skydiving. I do not understand parachutes, reserve chutes, how they work, what the likelihood is of splatting on the ground. So I'm more scared of skydiving than someone who actually skydives.
Yeah.
There are people who are scared of guns because they don't understand guns. And they just see them in movies, and they hear about them, and they see the news, and they're like, oh, gun, if I touch it, it'll go off, I'll die. It's like, well, no, if you actually have any sort of understanding, you'll know it's fine and you can jump out of the plane and survive.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know anything about skydiving, so I don't really want to do it. And it's scary.
No, it's a good parallel.
And then there's those super cool people that skydive with guns. And you're like,
yeah, exactly.
That is the ultimate cool.
But yeah, I mean, obviously familiarity and just getting used to and having experience with things, which I think, you know, as part of the gun community, I think we can all do a better job.
Absolutely.
Of because not everybody does this all the time, but like guns can be like a very, they are, and again, a lot of maybe it's driven by the media or whatever, or just like I said, like lack of familiarity, like they're kind of intimidating, right? Like a bad thing could happen if you know, use it improperly or kind of break those firearms rules. So, but you don't want to make people feel stupid because they don't know.
Yeah.
You know?
Exactly. Well, and guns are supposed to be intimidating. That's their purpose.
Right.
Being dangerous. Which people, I love how many gun people forget that. And I'm like, no, guns are dangerous. That is what they are for. That is why I own guns,
to be
dangerous. I want the most dangerous gun I can own. I just have to know how to use it so it's not dangerous to me.
Right.
It's that simple.
Valid point.
Yeah.
What about, on the content side of things, you know, and I guess we're kind of talking about, you know, a lot of new gun owners and stuff like that. Are you guys, is that an area of focus for you at all right now?
Can you say that again?
Like, you know, just on the content side of the house with T-Rex arms, mm-hmm. and we have all these new gun owners or people who are, or maybe they've, you know, they have a gun, but they kind of like rekindled, maybe I need to start using this thing. Like, are you guys creating content catered to that person? Like, hey, man, I need to know, like, those drills you do are amazing. Like, I'm super impressed, and I do want to get there someday, but, like, I need to, you know, learn just, like, the basics.
Yeah, so that's, and I will confess, I have a hard time dealing in beginner content when I'm interested in panoramic night vision and shooting to 400 meters and really awesome equipment. I will forget or take for granted, oh, we haven't talked about sight alignment or recoil control or, you know, safety or whatever
in
a while.
Or how to wear a sling.
So, like, at times, some of my guys in the company will kind of be like, hey, you know, I haven't done a video on a beginner thing in a while. And then I'm like, oh, shoot, you're right. I should actually do that. So last year I did a video how to shoot a handgun in 10 minutes. Actually one of the more difficult videos to film because you're condensing it into a small piece. But that was kind of one of those pieces of content, especially for 2020, because there were always new gun owners buying handguns and whatnot, needing to understand a few things, grip, stance, how to press the trigger, keep your finger off the trigger, you know, all that good stuff. I would say our ratio of content, though, is lopsided more to the gun owner that, you know, already owns some stuff, already kind of understands, probably owns an AR-15 already, you know, or already owns some, you know, nicer gear for it. But that is something that I'm hoping we can do more of, is some of that content for the newer folks out there. We've been creating some help sections on our website for, like, oh, if you're a new gun owner, here's what you should think about, or you have a rifle, here's what you might want to consider upgrading. You know, you want to light on it first, or a sling, one of the two. And then an optic, you know, and then maybe a trigger, and then maybe this, you know. But that is something that we need to do more of. I think we could do more of than some of the more, I don't want to say advanced, I don't like using that word, but the content for folks who are basically already in the know. We do quite a bit of that because that's what I'm interested in. That's what I'm actively doing and interested in, you know, in doing. But we still have to come back, you know, every month or two and be like, here's how you use a sling. Here's how you control recoil. Here's how you, you know, do whatever. And it's more basic, more. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, on top of that, we also have to come back and repeat, you know, the messages of what the Second Amendment is about. Because, you know, we'll go some weeks where it's like a really hot topic because there's like a political thing happening, so we'll talk about it, and then we'll go for like a couple of months posting our cool shooting and products and whatever, and then be like, oh shoot, we have all these new followers, we probably need to remind them all that, yo, the Second Amendment's for this and here's what it means, and just so you know. And then we lose some followers, but that's good with me. Separate the wheat from the chaff. I'm fine with it. But yeah, companies do need to be consistent with, you know, their messages. And circle back, aha, pun intended, circle back to, you know, some of the basic stuff or the core messages of the company, because it can be really easy to just get target focused on what, you know, you want to do as the content marketing team or the CEO, and then forget, oh, shoot, we left all these people behind, like all these new people, these new gun owners. And so I'm guilty of that. I'm not the most sterling example of going back to the beginner, you know, kind of folks and educating them. Although we do answer the same questions every week. Every month on our YouTube lives, so we do that, and our customer service.
What
same questions?
So what would be like maybe like a top, you know, 1 to 3 questions that you get that they're just like the most common that they just kind of resurface all the time.
What gun do I get? Mm-hmm. What AR-15? What barrel length or what AR-15 or what barrel length to buy? And then what the next one would be? It might be armor related, or it's probably it's usually what optic do you recommend?
Yeah.
And I usually go, well, if you don't have a light, don't worry about an optic. Get a light first, you can identify what you're actually shooting at. And then they're like, what? Oh my goodness. Okay. And then they ask about the light. But yeah, it's a lot of what gun do I buy? And we started getting those questions years ago through the company. We don't sell guns. Like, that's not what we do. But people just knew, like, oh, I can ask T-Rex Arms what pistol they recommend. Or what AR-15 they recommend. And we respond to all those. If you write to us and go, I'm thinking about buying a Ruger, we'll give you our opinion on what gun to buy, and odds are customer service will recommend you buy a Glock 19 instead. And I was not paid by Glock to say that. I make no money from Glock. But so that is something that those are the three questions I would say that, you know, we probably get the most. there, but it's you know, it gets kind of gratuitous. You know, it's the same kind of questions over and over. Or, you know, what vertical grip do I get? And it's like, well, it doesn't matter. Like, you just go out and train. Or like, oh, how much do I need to shoot? You know, and you've got to be able to bear with people, because there's always new people that mm-hmm. they're coming mm-hmm. into the gun industry. And I've seen folks in the gun industry get ticked off at, you know, beginners asking the same stupid questions, and they don't know what they don't know. Like, I ask stupid questions. I'm sure I still do. I know I did back in the day. That's just how it goes. We shouldn't be angry when people ask the wrong questions about, you know, how they zero their rifle or why they AR-15 over shotgun or whatever. Like, no, like, we're always going to have new people asking those questions. If you're not willing to bear with the new people, you probably shouldn't be in a position of authority within the gun industry, in my opinion. If you're not willing to actually take all the questions from the new people, which sometimes are dumb, you know, like lasers on pistols. Yeah, for 1% of gun owners, they're a good idea. If you're not doing those sorts of things, you probably shouldn't get a laser. You should have a white light and learn how to use your iron sights, and you're fine. Or a weird question is, which I don't see as often anymore, but it is interesting to bring up as a development point as far as like Instagram and the gun industry is, we see a lot less people asking if red dots on pistols are viable.
Oh, right.
Nowadays. Oh, yeah. Like, I remember 4 or 5 years ago when I had an RMR and a Glock, it was 6 years ago. Back then, there were very few people with red dots on pistols.
Yeah.
And the debate
you
back
looked
then.
At like space, yeah, like
the
space troopers.
The debate back then was,
you're
oh, my
trust
it's going to it's gonna break the glass, this, that. I it's shocking now when I see someone ask, are they viable? Like, I just don't see that asked very much anymore. Like, yeah. Almost every pistol comes with a plate, an optic plate out of the box. Some guns come with optics already installed. I know Vortex makes pistol optics. I haven't really used them, though. But, yeah, that's just one positive change I think we've seen is educating people on, yes, they are viable. Yes, they're effective. These are the ones on the market. These companies have stepped up to make them. No more. I mean, you don't have to ask anymore. Yeah. You can buy them or not buy them.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, I think with a lot of those, you know, quotation mark stupid questions, is like people, like, you're just not there. Like, I think of any time I start something new, like if I was like, oh, I want to pour my own concrete driveway. I have never done that before. I don't know why that popped into my head.
I would actually never
try something
that is
like that.
Far from anything I would ever expect you to do.
But I guess my example is, I guarantee I'd have a lot of questions that a guy that pours concrete driveways would be like,
yeah.
I cannot believe he is asking that.
Well, you go on any forum ever, and heaven forbid you ever have a question on a forum, and then you instantly get hit up with the admin, or usually admins are kind of like, they're just trying to keep the peace, but you get hit up with somebody who's like a senior member, and they've been there forever, and they go, use the search function! And it's like, well, I think it just took you more brain cells, like with how mad you are about how I didn't use the search function, than it would have to actually just write a 3-sentence response. Even if you've answered it.
You're not wrong.
Boy,
I have a lot of thoughts about the forum, Jim? The forum police.
Speaking of asking questions and kind of like a person's personal journey, you know, into firearms and progressing with their skills.
Great transition.
I mean, with you personally, Lucas, like you said, like, I've been shooting seriously for the last 5 years. Like, I've watched some of the videos. Like, you seem pretty advanced, you know, pretty fluid. Your movements are very deliberate. What did that look like for you? Like, where did you seek information to get to where you're at now?
So, and this is the thing that I try to communicate as much as possible. So I say that I'm a self-taught shooter. Now, what I mean by that is I did not have a shooting coach. I did not take classes every year. I did not take 10 different pistol classes. I took one carbine class 6 years ago, and then I took some specialized night vision classes. And what I did was, all I did is I shot some competitions to, you know, get some perspective on the skill gap between, you know, shooters. And at my local club, it wasn't incredible, but it was still, I thought I was hot stuff, showed up, and I was like fifth from the bottom, like 7 years ago. So I came away from that. I studied shooters online, USPSA competition shooters specifically. I wanted to find the guys at the top to establish perspective. So JJ Rakaza was one of them. I was like, who's winning? Him, Max Michelle. I'm like, all right, I'm going to follow these guys. I'm going to go find all the videos on YouTube of them. And I watched, and I saw, okay, they're entering and exiting position super fast. This is how they're standing. This is how they're controlling recoil. This is how fast they're shooting. I should be able to do all of these things, or at least I should be able to do these things to some level. So I used the guys at the top for my perspective, and then I crafted my training around, basically I was like, all right, if I want to be able to shoot through these kinds of targets in this amount of speed, I just need to get out and I need to do it. And I need to track the time it's taking me to do it. I need to track my hits. Probably one of the biggest mistakes that I made early on is I shot all my targets up close because it's really fun and fast and cool for the camera. The problem with shooting all your targets up close is you won't see your trigger deficiencies as blatantly. Or shooting steel. I shot a lot of large size steel back then. Steel lies. You don't know where you hit. So then later on, when I was going around and working with some different people, and I would go to their range or like a military range, and I would shoot, their Winchester NATO ammo. It's hotter, more recoil. We had smaller targets, or we were shooting further away. I was like, oof, this is not going as well as I would like. A little better on my range with the big steel and shooting targets 5 yards away, not as good now that we're shooting further away or doing stress shoots or whatever. So my training has definitely evolved as I've gone. But I did not take, 20, classes to learn shooting. I more or less taught it to myself. Now, using, materials online from folks like JJ Rakaza, and I actually flew out and took a 6-hour session with him back like 5 years ago. So I did that. That was one of the few training things that I did. But otherwise, it's just work on my own. Go to the range, have a plan, make a list. Be like, I'm going to work on recoil control. I'm going to work on target transitioning, entering position, entering, exiting. And but that's kind of one of my messages is you can teach yourself how to shoot. It's not rocket surgery. Like, you can teach yourself. Mm-hmm. You don't have to. In fact, the guys that I know who take 10 pistol classes generally suck at shooting more than the guy who takes one and then goes to the range with motivation and actually studies, analyzes, self-analyzes, and actually puts in the work. Yeah. And that's most competition shooters. A lot of high-level comp shooters don't run around taking tons of tactical classes from big-name instructors. They shoot matches, they train on their own, they dry fire, they watch some videos, they see what other comp shooters are doing, and they crush it, and they do great. You can save a lot of money not taking, as many classes.
Yeah, I mean,
that's my opinion.
Sounds like, combination of dedication.
Yep.
And then a very analytical approach of breaking down your process, other people's processes, like you said, finding where what's working, maybe some of those deficiencies and working at it.
Mark, do you have anything else? Mark, actually, for those not watching, Mark printed me out a piece of paper.
Well, because you refuse to print. I've got lots of things. I know, we've been going. It doesn't feel. This has gone fast. And now we're. I'd be curious. So, we're getting back to, at T-Rex. I mean, it's like you're, heading up the marketing side of the house. You're the CEO. You're doing a lot of things there. In a lot of ways, you're the, I hate this word, the personality, the quotation mark personality.
The Queen Elizabeth, the figurehead.
The figurehead. But, you are, in the content that you guys are creating. So is that, I see a lot of pluses and, some minuses to that.
No, absolutely.
Maybe, what's your take on that?
It's stressful for sure. I do think, this is something I talk about, celebrity marketing or CEO marketing. There are some definite pros to a CEO being public facing, and there's obviously some cons. The con is at any time, the CEO, he's under a microscope, whether it's me or another CEO. Any mistake or any misdeed or any misword or whatever, and I've made mistakes in the past, probably will make them in the future too. But anything, the CEO celebrity will do will get judged, which will correlate to sales and the livelihoods of the employees. So there's always that sword of Damocles, hanging over your head by a string. The pro to a CEO being in a public figure position is people will have a better look into the company and what the company is about. So that's I would argue the good side, provided the CEO is someone who, espouses the what the company's about and, whatnot. So that's, I think in our case, there's been pluses and minuses to that. I think for the most part, though, it has been a positive because I am very open about what our company does. I have positions. I like to lay them out when people ask, such as you all, about what our company does. I think I mentioned to you earlier about the whole Mexico situation we ran into earlier this year with AC Uno. You know, we were very public about that. I went on, I don't know, 5 live streams after that talking about it. And there's just a lot of companies where you don't have that direct access to the CEO. And I know there's been a lot of people that have valued that and have said, wow, your company's getting bigger, but you'll still respond to my direct message. You'll still talk to us on Instagram. And that's kind of been one of my priorities since the company started getting bigger is I never want to, you know, lose that, you know, that point of contact with the consumer, with the mm-hmm. customer. And there's a lot of CEOs, and there's some things that I don't do as a CEO that I should, that a normal CEO would do. But there, the other advantage to being in that kind of celebrity position is I do think the CEO has a better grasp of what is going on with the customers, with the consumers, because he's obviously interacting with them a lot more than a CEO that just, you know, sits behind a desk and comes up with a 5-year, 10-year plan and, you know, checks in with all the department heads and, you know, does the job of a CEO. So there's pros and cons. The biggest con is a lot of the infrastructure on the company will rely on that celebrity. You know, if that celebrity all of a sudden, you know, dies or leaves or, you know, something happens where he has to step away, now people are like, oh, well, now we don't know, like, what's going on with this company, and now that person's gone. So there are pros and cons to it. I'm hoping in the future that some of the responsibilities of being the spokesman or the figurehead can go to other people, and it's not just me, so the company doesn't just rely on, you know, some of the spokesmanship that I do. But there are some definite pros to that. So, like, for new business owners, that's something they're going to have to figure out. Like, you know, is the industry they're getting into such where they can be a public figure in it, where they can represent their own company? And I think every CEO obviously should represent their own company, and they do. But, you know, in a public setting.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, pros and cons. What else is there? Does that generally sum up the question or answer the question?
No, I think so.
As a CEO, how's your golf game?
I hate golf.
I go to the range instead.
You started talking about
I go to a different range.
Normal CEO things. I was going through my head. I was like, what do CEOs
do? Oh, I must play tennis then.
Drink a lot of bourbon.
A lot of that.
I'd be curious. You guys are making a ton of content.
Mm-hmm.
Is there any content that you consume personally? Like gun
Never.
Content?
Actually, no, that's funny. I actually don't. I try to keep up with... Obviously, I have to keep up with what the industry's doing. I got to keep up with what companies are doing. Right? Not even competition, just like in general. You know, optics, weapon lights, you know, lasers, night vision. Like, what's going on, right? You got to have a good idea of what's going on. Mm. And predicting what your company needs to be doing in the next few years to meet, you know, the demand of the consumer and what they want and whatnot. So I actually don't consume a lot of traditional, like, YouTube firearms content. Like, I am just not that interested, especially some of it really bores me. I'll skim stuff every once in a while, I'll check in with people, watch 2 minutes of their video, you know, some at the beginning, some at the end. The content I consume really the most is like business, like TED Talk kind of stuff.
Okay.
Stuff for the business, studying
right.
that. I get a lot, I actually, nowadays, it's actually great. I get a lot of gun industry status and kind of what's going on in it from our customer service team. Our customer service team, actually, they really keep up with what's going on in the industry, down to companies' Facebook groups. What's going on in there? How do they
right.
treat people? Do they treat people well or not? And then I kind of get an update from them on, hey, what's going on? What are people talking about that you're seeing? You know, I see some stuff on my end with Instagram and YouTube. What are you seeing with, you know, Reddit, which I never go to? Reddit, Facebook.
Oh, it's so fun.
I've heard. AR15.com, I never go there either. Or even M4Carbine.net, I think is what it's called.
.net, yeah.
Yeah, I used that a long time ago to try to find stuff, and I never touch forums. I never go.
Oh, I went down that hole.
Sure, it was fun.
Pros and cons to everything.
There are.
Speaking of pros and cons, you brought me down.
No, you're good. But so they keep me informed on things that I miss, but I don't actually consume a lot of gun industry content. Partly because there's not a lot of, in my opinion, really quality gun content out there. And what I'm interested in is shooting.
Glad you said it,
like,
not us.
I'm interested, and here's the thing, I'm biased because I shoot a lot. I'm interested in content that shows a high level or at least an above average level of skill. Unfortunately, most YouTube videos, it is far easier to shoot a little bit of B-roll and then talk at a table. And I'll say right now, when I film a YouTube video, it's a lot easier for me to talk about the item than it is to actually go to the range and put in work and actually demonstrate the item, especially if it's a hard-to-use item. Because that is work. But that is better content, and that actually requires having a level of skill. And so I don't see a lot of content like that on YouTube. It's a lot of talking with a tiny amount of shooting, and that just doesn't interest me at all. Like, I want to see, you know, some running around. I want to see some speed and accuracy. And I think that's one reason T-Rex, you know, our content and our platform blew up is we were producing that content from the beginning. And people just weren't, I mean, a lot of folks were doing gun reviews. And then there's us going SCAR 17 running and gunning and literally not talking about the gun, just shooting with no explanation, which in and of itself isn't always very helpful. But that's what the emphasis was years ago with our content. And I still think there's a void for other YouTubers. Anyone listening, $1 million idea for you, although you probably won't make $1 million doing it. if you want to start a YouTube channel and you want it to, you know, be different than everyone and possibly better than everyone, all you have to do is show some shooting. Like, you got to just run around.
You got to do something.
Shoot some guns. That's all you have to do. And you're already, in my opinion, I'm biased, better than most of the YouTube channels out there. Like, that's my opinion.
It's so simple.
Even if you actually go and shoot something, it's actually oftentimes being more helpful than just talking.
Talking? There's a lot of talk online already.
There's a lot of talking. I prefer to read than sit and watch somebody talk for you. Now, granted, of course, we're on a podcast. We've been talking for an hour.
Hey, people are driving. Hey, look, whoever's listening to this is driving right now.
They're driving.
So they can't read because the phone needs to be down.
We're doing them a service.
We are.
I got one of those headsets on the lawnmower with an antenna. that's right.
Two beers.
But, dude. But, no, that is helpful. I love watching stuff where someone's doing something. It's
skill.
So much better.
Yeah, people like it. That's why action movies do really well.
Also for product reviews, though, like you're talking about.
Yeah.
Like whenever I go on and somebody just talks and talks and talks and talks and talks, it's like, okay, yeah, I could have read this in a review online on the product's page. I want to see it being used.
Yep.
Like, right? Because if somebody's using it and then it breaks, then I know, oh, that thing breaks.
Yeah.
Or they did it wrong.
Or just how well it's being used.
Yeah.
There are some guns that shoot or operate better than other guns. They don't have to even break in the video, but just seeing, like, for a SCAR 16, for example, it is a little bit slower to shoot than other rifles because of the delayed recoil. The sight takes longer to rise and fall. And in a video, you could see that and just see how fast that gun is compared to a direct impingement standard AR-15 that's a little more snappy. But you'll only see that if you actually demonstrate shooting. If you just talk at a table, well, no, but I actually know that and see it.
Right.
So it's just not useful or as useful.
Right.
That's my pet peeve. Whatever.
my last one. I got one more.
You got one. I was going to ask you if you have any more questions because I have three.
We can do it
short,
three.
Though.
We can do it fast.
They're really fast.
We can do it fast.
My last one is you got so many videos, so I apologize if I missed this one. Bolt guns and stuff. Is that just like, doesn't do it for you?
FUD. No, I'm just kidding.
Oh, come on.
I honestly...
Drop the F-bomb.
Okay, I will say, there's a guy on Instagram that I follow. Okay, this is a perfect example of cultural desensitization. I have had zero interest in shooting a bolt gun. Because whatever. Like, semi-auto, gas gun, way cooler, offset red dot, running gun, shoot, be fast, cool.
It hurts,
flashy.
But all right.
Okay. But I found a guy on Instagram who really got me interested in running bolt gun. And I started talking to him and trying to figure out, like, what kind of bolt gun do I want? And I'm going to have to fly out west to shoot long range because, like, we can't do that really in Tennessee, even though we're the patron state of shooting stuff. His name is Philip Vallejo. He's a Marine, former Marine. I think he's out now.
It's a really familiar name.
But he had some Instagram videos of him working barriers, moving fast, you know, wasn't just prone. Shooting off of weird obstacles, working a bolt really fast and awesome looking. And I watched some of his videos, and those videos on a social media platform made me interested in a bolt gun. That's what made me interested in a bolt gun, not reading on air15.com or watching a Hollywood movie. So when people are like, Instagram doesn't help anyone, like, no, it helped me right there. I was actually interested in getting a 6.5 Creedmoor bolt gun of some kind. I don't know.
Yeah.
But I still don't know what I want.
Sounds like
what I want.
Sounds like you might like the PRS NRL scene or something like that.
Yeah, and some of the match stuff looks really fun, and I'm hoping in the future, because that would help round out some of my shooting stuff, to get into that. So someday, when I have time. Mm-hmm. But I am interested. It's not just for FUDs. Cool. I take back what I said.
All right. F-bomb retracted.
All right, I'll retract it.
The F-bomb.
All right, Mark, you can fire off your three.
All
remaining.
Right. Well, okay, so here's one. And maybe, I think we definitely covered this, but you know, for those like not super familiar with T-Rex Arms, I mean, you sell a variety of products, but like what are the products that you guys make specifically in-house?
We make so all the Kydex holsters we manufacture in-house. We just released a new version of our sidecar holster, where now it is modular. You can use it for 3, 4, 5 o'clock carry or appendix. It's not just dedicated to appendix anymore. You can put all sorts of accessories on it: tourniquet carrier, rifle mag carrier, handcuff carrier, pistol mag carrier, or another handgun. So you can have two handguns akimbo.
Ooh, all right.
Oh, well, with some modification, but it's pretty cool. Just kidding. Don't do that. If you do that.
Wow, I was thinking about it.
Yeah, if you do that, you're actually a FUD. But people asked.
F-bomb
So we have.
Tough crowd over here.
Oh, I trust me.
Two-gun Tommy over there.
Tactical Timmy. So we have the sidecar. We have the Kydex. We have a bunch of nylon that we... we have some nylon we produce in-house. We also have a nylon design, you know, designer and who works with me. And then there are companies that we outsource to, which, again, going back to my original comment, in the process of outsourcing earlier this year, we discovered that a vendor was, after signing paperwork saying it was BERRI compliant, U.S. made, was actually taking it across the border, which spurred an investigation, a lawsuit, and us being transparent with our customers, telling them, hey, all these plate carriers you bought that we thought were made in America, 15% of them weren't, so we're refunding all of you, and we're going to sell all of these at cost or at a very low price for those of you that, you know, are willing to buy a potentially made in Mexico carrier. So we did that back in like April. That whole thing's been a mess, but lots of learning points. So we do have companies here in the States that manufacture for us. We make the designs in-house. I am hoping in the future, though, that we can, because we don't have 100 sewers. Like, that's about, well, actually, no, we need 200 sewers to match the demand. I would like to start a textiles company or side of T-Rex someday. I don't know when, but of about 300, 400 people. But that's a lot. That's a lot. So we have other people who do that for us, who have the expertise, have the employees, have the machines, have the automation, handle that for us. We design in-house. But, yeah, the holsters... the nylon, and then we do a lot of retail for other companies. And body armor, we sell a lot of body armor for Hesco, and also some optics, the Razor, 1-6, and one of my favorites. I use it quite a lot.
Awesome.
So, yeah.
Fantastic. The body armor thing seems like that's getting a little bit more normalized.
Oh, absolutely.
Days.
It's all over.
Maybe I need some.
So I was about to ask. So do you?
Pretty soft there, Jim.
A little bit.
The question was, do you guys have armor? Do you need? Because I know someone.
I do not.
Talk offline.
I shouldn't have said that. You're right. I shouldn't have said that. Now I'm a target. Soft target.
Hey, well, everyone thought you were dead, but you're not. So that's okay.
That's right. I've come back.
Really,
think
anything is an improvement from dead, Jim. So.
Anything.
All right. Last question. Oh, no. Shoot. I got two more. Damn it, Jim.
This will be fast.
Just like, you know, it seems like a lot of, you know, what you do, the content you make, the products that you sell revolve around preparedness. So, like, do you kind of have an overall philosophy on, like, general preparedness for a person?
So, this is a unpublished slogan that our new procurement guy kind of, after coming to the company, it was like a year and a half ago, he kind of brought up. He was like, well, T-Rex seems to me like... you're the one-stop shop for the modern Minuteman. And we were all like, oh dang, that's
kind of
really
cool.
Awesome. So that sort saying has kind of you know, been going around the company. And that was kind of the premise from the beginning, but he kind of summed it up. His name is Brian. I think he works with someone here with ordering. And so that's kind of the concept. And so ultimately, that would include, I don't want to say everything revolving what a Minuteman in the 21st century would have, but technically, that could mean anything from night vision, helmets, body armor, sustainment gear, you know, load-bearing gear, the firearms themselves, although I don't know if we're going to do that, but who knows? Anything's possible. Our name's T-Rex Arms. We can do whatever we want. But it's anything that falls into that. Are we going to get into yachts and jet skis? Probably not. We're probably not going to do that. I'm sorry.
We'll do motorcycles.
You do the motorcycles.
We'll do guys do.
Okay.
We'll do guns that go on them.
Okay.
Yeah.
Fair enough.
Yeah. I like
fair
that.
Enough.
Yeah.
Fair
night vision, enough. All sorts of cool stuff. IR lights. So that's kind of, and we're still scoping out, you know, when some of these, you know, product suites will come to our website, because we're not done. I mean, we've got a bunch of stuff, but there's more we want to offer or produce in-house or assemble in-house or QC in-house. But that's sort of the unspoken or the unpublished slogan that we've been operating under or moving towards, where people can go to us and get everything, but not have to choose from everything. We are curating, you know, the products that we want to carry. We're not going to carry every optic out there. We're not going to carry every weapon line, every holster. We're going to carry the ones that, you know, we've used, that we really want to support, who are backed by quality companies, because that's a big deal to us. Like, we're not going to sell a product from a company that's just, you know, not doing very well as a company, because we are supporting them by doing that, affiliating with their brand. So being that place where they can go to, you know, see what's recommended and then acquire that item, but not have to choose between everything.
Yeah,
gotcha.
We don't want to be the Amazon. We're not. That's not our company vision. We're not trying to be the Amazon of the gun world. We're attempting to be something different.
That already exists anyway.
It does.
I'm gonna start Amazon Arms. All right. Last question. Where can people find you, Lucas?
You can Google T-Rex arms, and thankfully our website comes up before the article about why T-Rexes have small arms. Originally, that used to be at the top, and
nice.
It took me a few years to knock that down.
That's a feat. It really was a feat.
That's a success in and of itself.
I mean, you beat an actual T-Rex.
I did.
Wow.
I mean,
when you put it that way, some Jurassic Park level stuff right there.
Yeah, it is. So there's T-Rex Arms. That's where our website is. We just published a 3-hour free carbine class that I did for employees, and then we filmed it. That's exclusively on our website, not available anywhere else. So going back to the whole teach yourself, you know, attitude, materials like that can be useful, but it is supplemental content. It is not to replace an actual class. You should still go to one class a year, in my opinion. But we do have a 3-hour rifle class there on our website under the training page. I have a personal Instagram, Lucas T-Rex Arms. T-Rex Arms is an Instagram. T-Rex Arms is a YouTube. You can Google any of that, and it'll come up. And that's about it. Oh, and I stream video games and give away gear on Twitch, like real gear.
Sweet.
Like thousands of dollars a gear, but whatever.
Nice.
It's fun. The people on there fund it, and then I give body armor away. I use Jeff Bezos' money to fund gear for Americans. It's great.
I like that. Just turning it on its head.
It's very cool.
Awesome. Jim, close it out for us.
Well, with that being said, who out there listening, though, is a T-Rex Arms fan already? Who watches on YouTube? Hit us up in the comments below if you're watching this on YouTube. Or head over to Instagram where you can already, like we said, find Lucas there, and you can find us, too. Yeah, otherwise, thanks for listening to this one, and we'll catch you next time.
Thanks,
bye,
everybody.
Guys.
Bye.
Thanks.
All right, that'll wrap it up for this episode of the Vortex Nation podcast. Thanks, everybody, for listening. Hit that subscribe button so you can always stay up to date on the latest happenings over here at the Vortex Nation podcast. Leave us a review or comment down below. We want to hear what you have to say about the show, maybe what you like, maybe what you didn't like, so that way we can make these podcasts as good as they can be. You can also follow us on Instagram at Vortex Nation Podcast. We'll be posting about each episode released, so that way you can go back, find these things, maybe grab a little nugget of information that you can take with you to the range, out in the field, or maybe to the kitchen if we're talking about some good food. So again, everybody, thanks, and happy hunting and shooting. We appreciate it. Have a good one.